once every 7 years or so, Valentine's Day comes up on a Sunday. And clergy have to decide whether to ignore the day or preach it. You know, St. Valentine was likely a real person, but we really don't know very much about him. The folk tales tell us that he was a guy who did marriages for young men who were soldiers when the Roman Emperor thought that single men would make better soldiers. And he is supposed to have signed a note to a young lady he had a crush on, "From your Valentine." Not much to preach on there. For Catholics and Episcopalians, his day is still a feast day, so they have an excuse for bringing him up. Those of us out there on the liberal edge of religion don't really have that mandatory excuse, but I'm sure that somewhere in the planning for our monthly theme for February, desire, there was some influence from Valentine's Day landing on a Sunday. So while it's tempting to make this service today a celebration of relationships and love, I want to go in a somewhat different direction and consider the roles that our most intimate relationships and partnerships and friendships play in the larger spiritual challenges that we face in our lives, and especially the challenge of living a life that is whole and that is complete. So I was initially inspired by one of my old favorite books, The Missing Piece. It's a story I've enjoyed and loved for decades. Some of you probably have too. And as you've seen, it's a story that tells us about this odd little creature who was missing a piece and was not happy. It's been billed here today as our story for all ages, but I think that's a really fine example of how we really mean it when we call a story for all ages, because our adult ears hear that story a little differently than maybe we did when we were kids. So the story proceeds by describing the creature's journey in search of its missing piece and all of the things it does and the relationships it has along the way, until lo and behold, it finds the piece that fits perfectly. Extrapolating this to what happens to us in our most intimate relationships, we all know what that desire to be fulfilled by a trusted and intimate relationship with another person feels like. There's a scene from a movie I remember from the late 90s that was called Jerry Maguire, where a young Tom Cruise tells the woman he is pursuing, "You complete me." That's just the image in the missing piece story, and I must confess it's probably an image of marriage I have been guilty of bringing forward in hundreds of wedding ceremonies one way or another. But is that what we really want in our most intimate relationships? So the punchline in the missing piece story catches us by surprise. With the missing piece securely in place, the little creature finds that everything has changed. It's no longer the same as it once was, and there is both comfort and confusion in that. Things that you used to love to do and did well, you can't do quite the same way anymore because that missing piece is in place. Sounds like a marriage to me. In the reading that we heard from Parker Palmer, Quaker theologian, he warns us against living divided lives, so far removed from the truth we hold within us that we can't know the integrity that comes from being just who you are. And I think that's what the character in the missing piece story is struggling with. Its desire to be completed obscures the wholeness that's already there, because it thinks that having a missing piece is a deficit and a problem. It is, in fact, missing another piece, a far more important piece, the kind that's spelled P-E-A-C-E. Parker Palmer's questions are critical ones for us to ask ourselves today. How can I affirm another's identity when I deny my own? How can I trust another's integrity when I defy my own? If we are lucky enough to find deep and intimate relationships in a marriage or in a friendship or with a family member, It changes us, and that change is not easy to anticipate. And we hope and we trust that it's a change mostly for the better. But the person that you are with someone you love, is different than the person that you are alone. And each of these has its own integrity and offers us a path to finding inner peace. I want to suggest that the best intimate relationships are the ones that don't look like that creature in the missing piece, where one subordinate piece is completing the other. That's actually what Tom Cruise's character in Jerry Maguire looks like and what he's looking for. He is a self-absorbed enough character that he's looking for a relationship that will fit nicely into his life. He's not up for being changed. If I was to make a little line drawing, like in the book, of what long-term healthy intimate relationships really look like, it would involve two circles that are revolving around each other. And both of these circles would have dings and dents and missing pieces, for sure. But both of them would stand alone and be whole within themselves. They aren't merged into one, but they represent something new in the world when they are together. And when they're not together, they each can stand by themselves. There is something very deep in what it means for us to be human in this picture of two separate and whole beings touching each other to bring something new into the world. In the early verses of the book of Genesis, we're given an image of God creating humanity before any other life, before the plants and the animals, in the theological perspective called process theology. There is a picture given of God as an evolving and not a static, unchanging reality. And the beginning of God's evolution is in God's desire to bring human consciousness into the world and have a relationship with that consciousness. The most poetic interpretations of this view of God suggest that God needed to make us to be complete. Whether you can accept this interpretation, this poetry about God or not, we can all recognize that our ancient Judeo-Christian creation story has humanity created in the beginning with free will and independence and choice, and these are the qualities that make humanity whole in and of ourselves, apart from God. And I think one of the most beautiful artistic images of this wholeness is the Michelangelo Sistine Chapel painting of God reaching out to touch Adam. Depicted as two separate beings in powerful and longing relationship within the huge circle of this painting on the ceiling, with their hands almost touching, but not quite. Are they two realities or are they one? Are they incomplete or are they whole together? Part of what it means to be able to move through the world in wholeness is to be able to be comfortable in your own skin, as comfortable with your solitude in the world as you are comfortable in the company of those that you love. So in the second part of the sermon, I want to talk more about what Parker Palmer calls the hidden wholeness in our lives and how you need to find that in solitude before you can find it in interdependent and loving relationships with others. But first, I've asked Marla to come up and read a favorite poem of mine about solitude from the poet who's been a great companion of mine during this year of change and transition in my life, David White. There's peace in solitude. And as David White reminds us, it is a great mistake to act out the drama of your solitude as if you were alone. The theologian Paul Tillich has written, "Our language has wisely sensed the two sides of being alone. It has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone. And it has created the word solitude to express the glory of being alone. Though loneliness and solitude are companions, They can coexist within us depending on the circumstances in which we find ourselves. It is truly an astonishing thing to contemplate all of the subjectivity that is on this planet, almost as mind-boggling as trying to hold all of the stars in the heavens in your mind. We move through our lives having the experience of being contained within these ever-changing, ever-aging bodies, like bottles bobbing along on the ocean of human experience that we can't quite become a part of. Each of us holding on to that message of meaning in this bottle body that our lives represent. Ironically, it is this very subjectivity that can feel so lonely and isolating, but it's really one of the most common things that we share with all other human beings on this planet. Loneliness is a shared experience. We all know what it feels like. We hold it in common. Yet far too many of us spend a lot of time believing that no one understands how our loneliness feels, that our experience is uniquely painful, and that our predicament in seeking an answer to our loneliness is insoluble. This is where it helps to have solitude as a companion with your loneliness. Solitude looks like loneliness twin, but these two inhabit our lives quite differently. Loneliness is kind of an unwelcome guest that moves in whenever it wants. Solitude waits to be invited. Loneliness keeps chattering away while you're trying to do other things to distract yourself. Make a meal, watch TV, volunteer, go out with your spouse, play with kids. Loneliness doesn't really care whether you're married or a parent or single or divorced or widowed. Loneliness is non-discriminatory. It will visit anybody. Solitude is a little bit more shy. And it isn't sure if busy people really want to spend time together with solitude. But it waits, nevertheless, to see. Loneliness just won't stop talking. Solitude, on the other hand, is there when you're not busy and kind of whispers, well, what shall we do now? Maybe nothing for a while, or maybe something you've always wanted to do, or maybe something you could only just imagine doing for a while. Solitude waits for you to say something back, and if you don't, that's okay. Loneliness gets really angry sometimes and tries to make you feel bad about yourself. Solitude just leaves if you don't pay it attention and sits in the next room until you're ready. Some people think solitude is a warrior who is there to be enlisted to defeat loneliness, but that's not what solitude is there to do. Solitude is there to introduce you to yourself, the hidden wholeness that you have already. And I think one of the hardest things to do in long-term relationships, marriage or friendship, where you rely on one another, is not to be afraid of your beloved's solitude and not to mistake it for the isolation of loneliness. It's easy to become lonely in a marriage. Many people do that. It helps to appreciate that marriages don't necessarily solve or banish loneliness. But if the marriage can leave room for solitude, the chances are that loneliness will only be doing an occasional overnighter and not become a long-term guest. The wholeness that we are has many enemies that create a divided life. It's easy to describe so many of the possible ways we make choices to live a divided life. We can make our living at jobs that violate our basic values even when survival does not absolutely demand it. We can remain in settings or relationships that steadily kill off our spirit. We can harbor secrets to achieve personal gain at the expense of other people. We can hide our beliefs from those who disagree with us to avoid conflict or challenge or change. And we can conceal our true identities for fear of being criticized or shunned or attacked. Each of these are circumstances that are created by decisions that we make. They all create division and distance between the self that you are now and the self that you wish to become. A fragmented life may be endemic, but to become whole, to become of one piece and at peace, is also a choice. We can make different choices. We can confront our own denial, our anger, our greed. We can examine them closely, and we can ask ourselves, what would a whole life look like? What is the missing piece of my life that would bring me more peace? It is heretical on Valentine's Day to suggest that intimate relationships may not be the place to look for your wholeness. I know. But in what I've said today, I have had no intention of discouraging or disparaging the courage that is involved in taking the risk of committed relationship and their indispensable value in our lives. Even the ones that didn't turn out the way that you'd hoped can often be relationships that you would not choose to make disappear from your life's experience. And even those relationships that turn out exactly the way that you hoped for, that fulfill your every need and your every dream, will end in loss anyway, because that is the way of the world. And one of you, more than likely, will have to go first. So if that's the nature of the life we share, taking the risk and creating the time and making the effort to be acquainted with solitude is going to be worthwhile. Chance being misunderstood by a possessive partner or a clinging friend, but I hope that's something you could work through, and that the wholeness that comes from being intimate with yourself and make easier all the difficult choices that you have to make to sustain your wholeness over time. The missing piece turns out to be the stranger who was yourself, that you finally get to know. And in one more poem that brings my reflections today to a close, the South African poet Derek Walcott does a lovely job of describing what this looks like. Kind of what it means to be your own Valentine. This is called Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit, here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, but who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life.